Anyway, what I'd like to have is someone up here so that you demonstrate contacts, contact points, et cetera.
Já estás com saudades minhas? Vais a ver?
Nem
que hoje? Que dia hoje? 16.
Dia 5.
Toma.
Não,
check the superior end, you know, what's your anterior that. If I go over there, we can't see. And you can't be there immediately. Thank you. Now, in regards to the Acetab, the femur, its relationship to the Acetab, the capsule. The easiest way I've found to evaluate that without having to haul around the whole leg, and when I get some of these 300-pound men, and they're not fat, they're in condition, it's difficult to manage that. So the thing is to take your fingers into the sulcus on the side that you're on, the sacrum, the thenar eminence behind the greater trochanter. So if you drop the leg out, the pressure of the greater trochanter against your thenar eminence takes the femoral head anterior and the acetabulum. Just balance the leg come into your shoulder so you can balance it, you can look in and out if you need to take up the tension into the anterior fascia. So if you get in here above and below the adductor group and approximate the capsule anteriorly, the whole thing right in your hand. Yeah. acetabulum is formed by three equal portions of the ilium, ischium, and pubis that all come in a triangular fashion and form a complete thing. So that by taking the femur and rotating it and balancing with your palpation into the acetabulum, bringing it to balance the system, taking any stress out of it. So it potentially will help the undeveloped portion of it come to and work with the rest of it.
Then how would you approach that if you're not able to get much adduction?
Well, you don't have to use the adduction if you've got that kind of gut spasm and tension. If you can bring the knee up into flexion on the trunk with the youngster, well, the leg is small enough, my hand is thick enough that if I get in here, not as close as I can to the acetabulum, but they bring the leg up over. That's how it disengages, so we get the tension in the ligamentary there. But it depends, then it is up to me to balance the fascia into the joint posterior and anterior. Completely prima facie. Okay? To say, it's not a thing, this is the technique. It's the thing, what is the problem? And how to work perfect. Because it's a thing that you're flying by the seat of your pants all the time. But as long as you know the anatomy, it's an easy play. Okay. Any other questions about the pelvis? I have a particularly traumatized pelvis, sacrum. Kids that like the skateboard and skate, apparently it calls this skating thing, rollerblades and that sort of thing. The most common thing that they'll do is they'll stop and they'll forget they're on the rollerblades and relax, get their weight off their toes, zip, boom, come right down on in a good solid pratfall, which catches the apex of the sacrum, the coccyx usually, and jams it quite well. Now this is what Viola was talking with, I forget who it was, talking about going in rectally to pull a coccyx out. I haven't had to do anything like that in 20 years, really severely traumatized coccyx and sacrum. What I do is come into the hiatus of the sacrum with my thumb so I can pick up the posterior longitudinal ligament as it changes into the sacrococcygeal ligament. Pick up the tip of the coccyx with my fingertip. Compress the coccyx up into the sacrum and palpate until I get that compression just right and allow it, as if I were doing a granule manipulation, allow it to pump itself loose as much as it can. Now, it may take me 2 or 3 times to get that all pumped out of there. But by doing that, I can kind of just relieve the stress through the air. Okay. Then, continuing on with that approach, I'll check the apex and the base with my hand, my thenar abdomen at the base, my upper hand, and the thenar abdomen of the lower hand at the apex, and just gently put a little tension in the base, see if the apex can come back, put a little tension at the release lap, put a little tension at the apex. And see if the base can come back, so I'm taking the two flexion and extension. Now, with that, if their arms are up, you're going to have tension all through the trunk, fascia, coming down to the ilium, coming down to the base. stress and tension and balance that with the hypothenar evidence going into L2s or L3, 4, by the rest of my hand, 5, the base. I can take the whole thing and do a balanced tension. Now, indeed, let's say, and just let it gently let it work its way out and change the stress to the whole thing. Now, if you have an interosseous, as Dr. Hagopian was talking about, you may have 1, 2, or 3 segments in going into one direction and the rest of it going in another direction across an area of the same, depending on how the stress has been applied to it. So by picking up the upper component at the solstice, the lateral axis, as it is rotated, and picking up the lower component from the coccyx, sacral coccyx shield, into the inferior angle of the sacrum, balancing the tension across the sacrum in this manner, allow it to pump itself so that the segments that are in strain can resolve. Question?
I love it anyway.
fact, when you have a severe strain through here, so much of the time your stress will go right on up to what is a warm fashion, because the ileum has been carried with the sacrum in the opposite direction of the sacrum. So when the stress comes up through the quadratus lumborum fascia and the paravertebral musculature. So you usually will find that you've got a lot of stress in 12th, 11th, maybe 10th grade, all the way down through. By putting that knee out there again, I can engage quadratus here, quadratus lumborum through here. Right, just rolling, changing the position of that leg to get the tension where I need it through there. Pick up the rib, try to get this neutral. Now, I'm tall enough that on a low table like this, I can get my foot up here.
Hold that leg there, hold this.
So I got the leverage working right up at the TL junction. I can work with that rib for either side, both sides. Okay? If you look by hand, you know. about it, but if I put my hands together, it's like this, if you look at what the difference in size. Okay? And we've gone through all the brain contacts. One thing we should probably reemphasize, I believe we should ask me about sinuses and allergies and asthma. We treat a lot of kids with this triad of symptoms. The thing is that all of it is symptoms. So that we have to check into the thing from the standpoint of all ramifications of where those possible symptoms can arise from. The majority of them will start at the thoracic inlet. T1 and T2 contribute to diacritic carotid carotid plexus. And that along with the internal carotid enter into the cranium with the internal carotid artery and are distributed anteriorly to the anterior two-thirds of the head with sympathetic fibers in that part. So if you have a lot of congestion, sometimes you don't even have to treat this. What you have to do is treat this and then start pounding the congestion. Get this to function so that that can function. But with that, when you have stress in the thoracic inlet, you're bound to have stress right on the suboccipital area and the suboccipital triangle. Again, is bring those in balance. And that's just getting as close as you can to the condylar portions of the occiput with your fingertips. Balance the temporal bone. Get that whole balance there. Let the chin drop so you can get a little deeper into the occiput. And more of contact and stretch into the suboccipital triangle. We can balance across the temples and the occiput. And when you accomplish that, you can check and see if there's any tension or restriction of motion in the neck at that point.
We don't speak about CV4. What do you think is so in your approach?
There are 10,000 ways of doing CV4. And the thing is this, I do it in a particular manner because my hands will allow me to do that. And I'm not recommending that you try my method. I'm recommending that you try the method as explained in OCF text. Because that, when you learn that and you can apply with CV4, then you can adapt it to how your hands work best. Okay?
Size of the patient
and the size of the operator's hand. Because when you've got a little infant, I often won't even do what you would directly call a CV4. But I will take the whole posterior fossa through the temporals and the occiput, and accomplish a CV4 through that contact. But if you try and do it and you don't know what you're doing with the temporals, you're going to mess them up. So you have to know where you're at with those temporals. You always have to be aware of what's going on, in this case with the victim. let the office put civil back against the fingertips on the thing where I was. Of course, not everybody has a duly inspected thing where I was working with on that state. And so you gotta remember, what you're doing is, and you're essentially the time it takes things in the internal rotation extension. And you can't leave them there where you're gonna have problems. You have to make sure they go to the external rotation whenever you complete the same thing. Yes?
And the last thing, when you're saying you balance the opposite direction with the natural balance.
Yes.
There are things that I'm probably against on the temporary balance, please.
I don't know, see, my mind was on the temporal. So I was in control of the beams, I was in control of the conduit portions, I was in control of the outlet portion. My mind was on the through my hands. Now, it takes a year or two before you develop that. But it's worth working when you're trying to get it. It's worth working.
See, you're about to come in.
I beg your pardon?
The take it up to us.
Maybe that, I'm not sure. Well, anything else? Now,
when he back at the winters, when we view the hand positioning on the stroke of big wood junction controller to mobilize that area.
Do the thoracic athletic? Okay, when I do it two-handed now, I don't expect all you, maybe we should just go with the one-handed thing. So I'm gonna bring my thumb anterior to the traps on this side. And come down into the angle of the first rib. And I can, if I can gently get down into there, it's not too much better than the levator scapula line, I'll go down to the angle of the second rib, pick the load up at the same time. Pick up the sternum, make an articulation here. That gives us a direct contact into the first rib through the capsule. Pick up the second rib and the third rib here. Modify the position of the shoulder. Don't put the tension through your fingertips. You block out your sense of touch and you cause a lot of pain. Do the tension through the zenar and hypothenar ends as they pull the shoulder so you can modify the position. Okay? Rotating the head in the opposite direction that the ribs are rotating goes back to Fayette's rules. Spinal motion. So I balance that right down in, and that increases the tension into the ribs, tends to elevate them at the same time that I'm trying to release it in the other context. Okay? Into here to evaluate whether or not he actually has any stress. It's a powerful time. Same time now, I'll pick up the radial head on my fingertip behind the elbow. I'll pick up the ulna on my thumb, but I'll go directly into the popliteal fossa and then come laterally. So I pick up the aponeurosis of the biceps as it comes down in the fore and goes to the tip or the radius and the ulna. And just take, and you need to exert a little compression or a little traction. Get the attention of the tissues. Take them to a different position. Okay, and all you do is follow them as they were. All right? Sir?
No, before you leave the patient's side, you. You have an approach to the shoulder that I remember corrected a shoulder problem with the patient seated.
Well, I was seated or wasn't in spine position.
You did that spine also?
Yeah.
Is that for the AC joint? Am I remembering correctly?
AC joint, getting into the actual humeral joint, so you can move the humerus forward or backward. To do that, what I'll do is have the patient bring their arm, so they put the hand on my shoulder when I have the spine. Take my thenar elements behind and lateral to the acromial process, so I'm supporting the head of the humerus and the glenoid. Come into the groove here where the coracal brachialis and the tendon of the biceps come up into the coracoid. Slide my thumb posteriorly up into the rotator cuff, and I've got the whole joint. So all I have to do is rotate it here a little bit in this position, balance all the way through. If I need to, I can slip the thumb across here, and with contact the clavicle anteriorly, and the acromial process. So I've got the whole shoulder joint. And that is a little bit more. Okay? Okay, Sam? You want to see it sitting up? Do it a little differently, Sam.
You're going to do this with the frozen shoulder in the beginning.
Yes. Because sitting up, we won't have to get the arm. We just have the forearm, rest of the arm. Okay? Take the thumb up onto the pectoral fold and reach up with the coracoid. Figure out the acromial regular articulation below it. Goes to your hand, come up into the rotator cuff. And now, what I do, is since I've got my fulcrum up inside the humerus, is push the elbow medially to open up the whole joint. Then I can rotate the arm to adjust the balance of the tissues in the
You mentioned before, and I'm not going to do it, but asthma.
Speak up, please, your voice is very soft, it's very nice to talk to you.
Okay, I'll speak it up. Somebody mentioned problem with asthma in relation to what we're doing. Could you say a little bit more?
That's really not necessary. I found that I bumped into this accidentally or somehow, I'm not sure, how. But many years ago, when I was working with Bill Rankin Sr. down in Marietta, Ohio, we did a study, had a study group come in and we did some work. So I started trying to put together this thing with asthma. And I found that the majority of asthmatic children were still suffering from a vertical strain, sphenoid low, in relationship to this whole kind. So that dropped the anterior fascia in behind the larynx and so on, and down into the main stem bronchi, so it did not support them in the manner that they should be supported. The varicose tubercle was taken up, so that it treated tension into the deep fascia. So they could get the air in, but when they tried to blow it out, part collapsed, and it didn't blow in. So if I could relieve the vertical strain, the kids would start breathing. And we've had a number of kids that come in on respirators and using various pumps to get dilators down and so on and so on. And one girl about 9 years old, we've been doing that for 4 or 5 years and so on. She would carry her pump to the school with her. And go into the nursing room and pump it. Dilation of her chest. We worked with her for 3 weeks. 3 months later, the family finally took the pump down to the basement. 6 months later, they sold her. It's not always allergy, but that's what medicine would like to make it, because that gives them a logical cause that they can treat. And if there is a, there's some other underlying thing in there that's preventing that immune system from reacting. So we need to go to the doctor and check it out and find out.
When there is a patient who makes a huge use of cortisone, so that the adrenal glands are suffering.
Cortisone, that yeah. Sort of thing, yes.
So what can osteopath do?
Well, an osteopath can treat him and start weaning him off of it slowly. That's all you do, but you're going to take, it may take weeks to get them weaned off of the steroids, according to steroids.
To restore the physiology first.
I didn't think
the
comment.
You start to restore the physiology.
Yes, you treat them to start restoring the physiology as much as possible.
Start weaning the medicine, and then you can start to weaning the medicine. Okay, should we take a brief break?
Sorry, I gave it to Nathan.
Right.
fellow.